My name is Ralph White and I'm an alcoholic. I want to thank the group for asking me for bringing me out all the way across country to come out and share in this anniversary with you. In case you don't know, I'm from Los Angeles, California, and I live in the state of grace. And I want to let you know tonight that the same power that's smiling on you in Florida this evening is still doing the same thing in meetings all across. You know, I just left Atlanta last weekend. I was sitting there thinking about it. People were standing up talking about the places they come from. And anywhere I go in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, I feel right at home. Now, I don't say it because I'm the speaker tonight, but you guys really made a brother feel welcome. You know, from the time I hit the door, you know, we had the GQ set over here, and they were they had the receiving line. They almost made me run through like Kobe giving low fives, but I said I might be in Miami Heat territory, so I won't rub it in with you guys. So you know, so those guys over there, and then so many of you came up and greeted me and shared with me some memories and some things that you remembered about. I've been in Tampa, Florida one time before, and then I was at the state convention in Miami a couple of months ago. So some people came up to me and they were sharing with me those kinds of memories, and you really don't know what it does for somebody that's coming out of town to feel that kind of hospitality. And I want to thank you. I want to thank Steve and the boys for picking me up, you know, getting me out here, doing what it is we do. And I want to really do the most important. Oh, congratulations to all the people that came up here and took your chips. You know, I like that kind of energy. You know, I'm going to critique something for some of you guys, especially some of the fellas. The reason you got a pretty chip girl up here is to get your hugs. When you come get your chip, when you get your chip, get your hug. You know, that's what we do in AA. We hug and we rejoice and we celebrate and we support and we encourage and we uplift. And that's what it is we do. If you go somewhere else, somebody will say to you, if you on this road of recovery and you fairly new at it, and people, you might be doing it and you'd be like, damn, if you go home and tell somebody, you know, I've been sober for 60 days, I haven't had a DUI, you know, I made it home with my paycheck. And if you got a mama like me, she'd be like, and I've been doing that for 70 years. What, you want a parade for that? You know, so in the world, but in Alcoholics Anonymous, you get a parade for that. In Alcoholics Anonymous, we clap for 60 days. In Alcoholics Anonymous, we clap for 30 days. In Alcoholics Anonymous, we revel in that. And we understand that that's a big deal. You know, so take your hugs, dude. You know, I saw the guy with 9 months. He's been getting his chips a little while. He took one. But some of the others. Enough of that foolishness. Let's do what we came here for. And what we came here for, and the most important thing I can do tonight, the most important thing I'll do, and then I could quit. I want to welcome our new friends to Alcoholics Anonymous. I want to let you know, if you drank like I drank, if you've done some of the things I've done, if you've ever felt like some of the ways I felt, this is probably the best step you can take from the cradle to the grave. Especially if you return. I've been one of those returners. And sometime when you stand up, you know, at home, at the beginning of meetings, we ask for new people to stand up and identify themselves so we'll get to know you better. And sometimes that's a really humiliating feeling, or it's a terrible feeling, or it's a remorseful feeling. And sometimes people will say, you know, I applaud you for your courage. You know, and if you're coming back, I pray you desperation. I pray you desperation. For me, the reason you got me sitting up, standing up in front of you tonight is not because I'm a good guy. It's not because I'm a virtuous guy. It's not because I stumbled into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous coming off of choir rehearsal. I came, the reason you got me standing in front of you tonight is there was a dark night some years ago where desperation met opportunity, and I jumped through the window. I jumped through that window. And it's a window that closes real fast. Because I had been in those situations before. I had sucked on youngsters' pistols before. I had told myself I'm not doing this no more. I had said I'm going to get some help. And then the morning will come and I'll think to myself, that dude wasn't really that serious. It wasn't really that bad. You're making a bit too much of this thing. So if you're in the window right now, when desperation meets opportunity, it's a sliver of grace that'll come through. And while walking under that umbrella of grace, what we do every day, one day at a time, going to meetings, we open the window a little bit wider. We open the window a little bit wider. And we stay connected and we walk under that grace till we can get connected to a power. A power that has given me the power to say under all conditions and all circumstances, no thank you, I'm not drinking today. That's a huge deal for a guy like me. You know, you guys are excited, you're enthusiastic, you're sitting here as an anniversary meeting. I need to let you know who's in front of you right now. You might not know, and I need to just give you the disclaimer. You know, I'm an image guy. You know, I'm a what you think of me guy. You know, I'm style over substance. You know, I'm, you know, in a minute, you know, all front, no back. You know, I'm really not interested in being honest. I'm the kind of guy that's just interested in what I could convince you is the truth, you know. So the guy that's standing in front of you. So being an image guy and listening to all announcements about 12-step workshops, listening to announcements about service work, listening to announcements at a group like this, and looking at Alcoholics Anonymous in action. You know, my temptation is to stand in front of you right now and say, I'm not going to share a long drunkalog. I just want to share about recovery. Because, you know, I'm tempted to quote some page line references, let you know I know the book inside out, you know, dazzle you with my knowledge of the steps in the process. You know, but I remember Dawn coming back that last time. I remember being fair and new to Alcoholics Anonymous. I remember them taking me to a meeting. Guy standing in front of the group somewhat like I am tonight. Dressed pretty nice, hair comb, eyes bright, stringing sentences together real well. I remember thinking to myself that night, I know this cat ain't been where I've been. I know he ain't felt what I felt, and I know he ain't done what I've done. What can this lame tell me? So it's real important that I let you know that the man that's standing in front of you tonight is not the same one that stumbled into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous some few summers ago. I'm going to share with you in a general way what I used to be like, what happened, and what I'm like today, in the hopes that one of the people that took a white chip will be sitting out there thinking like I was thinking. Man, I used to do the same thing. I used to feel the same way, or more important, I too want to have this thing. I grew up in South Central Los Angeles. I grew up in the heart of Watts. I'm from a real large family. There's six boys in my family. I used to really claim I was from a real large family. I talked to you some time ago, got a boy here that hosted me at the time, Melvin. And I got to talking to Melvin, and I don't want to say I'm from a big family no more. My family is only about half the size of Melvin's family, but big family. All boys, six of us. We stayed in a little two-bedroom apartment. Moms and pops stayed in one room. Six boys stayed in three bunk beds in the other room. Earliest memory of my old man was he was an alcoholic and I didn't want to be like him. My father wasn't abusive and my father wasn't violent. My father was an absentee drunk. And every other Friday, like clockwork, you knew he wouldn't show up with a check. You know, it would be a kid in the neighborhood who would come around to my family and share how my old man had been performing up at the pool hall previous Friday or Saturday night, and I would feel ashamed and embarrassed. And those are feelings I'm familiar with from an early age. Pops got put out when I was 8 or 9 years old. Moms proceeded to raise six boys by herself. Don't know about the rest of you guys. It's a young crew in here. I'm a kind of old guy. And I grew up, at the time I grew up, ideal family life was depicted by TV programs. And the TV programs when I was a kid, you might see them on cable now, they showed ideal families. Father knows best, my three sons, Leave It to Beaver, Donna Reed. You know, bet that wasn't jumping off in my house. You know, when you grow on, you get something that's called perspective. Perspective works like this. You got a mom that raised six boys by herself. Old Southern Baptist sister. My mother was on welfare when I was a kid. And she raised these six boys by herself, refused to settle for her condition. And she put herself back through high school. She put herself through college. She worked two jobs. She took in clothes that she washed and ironed for other folk. And when you grown, you look back on your life and say, damn, I had a hell of a mom. Look how she sacrificed to raise her boys. But when you were a kid about 9 or 10 years old, and you coming home from school on a Wednesday afternoon with a couple of partners, and you hit the front door, and mom's in the living room with her ironing board up and a rag on her head, you don't feel proud. You feel ashamed and embarrassed. And if your name is Ralph, you start living in that prison I've lived in much of my life. Prison I live in sometimes even today. And that's the prison of what I think you think about me. See, I don't know what you think about me, but I'm trapped in what I think you think about me. And I'll do whatever it takes to shape and form and mold your opinion around. I'll whine you, I'll dine you, I'll woo you, I'll con you, I'll bully you, I'll manipulate you, I'll buy you. Please like me. Now, I don't particularly have to like your ass, but please like me. So I'm growing up like that. New friends, new to the Alcoholics Anonymous, you'll hear a lot of common themes from members of our group. And one of the common themes you'll hear from most of our members when they get up to a podium like this is, I never felt like I fit in. And that's not a part of my story. I'm a little guy, I like a lot of attention. I've never been interested in fitting in. I've always wanted to stand out. And as a result of that, I achieved and I accomplished some things coming up in life. Now, I don't want you to misunderstand when I tell you about my childhood, because I wouldn't have changed it for anything in the world. I know outwardly somebody will be thinking, damn, he made it. His mama was on welfare. She was catching the bus. She was washing clothes for him, you know. But I was a kid. I'm the kind of kid that went to bed on Christmas Eve with all his clothes on, because I couldn't wait for Christmas Day to come. Later on in life, I learned that my mother would have a budget of $40 or $50 for her six boys. And we might get some board games, Chinese checkers, dominoes. I might get a glove, but it'll be a lot of cooking in the house. And it'll be a lot of love in the house. And it was always a Christmas tree and presents underneath and a lot of excitement in the shows that came on preceding Christmas. And then it would be Christmas plays and my mom always showed up for all of our activities. And it would be a lot of people at my house. And it was a lot of love in my house. I didn't see alcoholism. I never saw active alcoholism in my house, although I was affected by it. My father drank away from home. Then he got put out when I was 8 or 9 years old. So I was used to growing up in a pretty loving environment. And my mom is a remarkable lady. So I'm the kind of kid, I never knew a lonely moment. You know, I got five brothers. Baseball was my game. We made up the whole infield. One of my brothers played left field. It was a changing time and it was a turbulent time in this country. You know, it was it was the 60s. Stuff was going on. Things were changing and I was caught up in it and I was very active and I was going to make a difference. I was going to be somebody and I was going to do something and I was going to leave my mark on the world. You could go to parks and you could play ball in the street in those days and I just couldn't imagine being somebody other than what I am. So I'm not here to report to you tonight that I'm an alcoholic because I'm the product of a broken home. Somebody in here grew up with both parents in the house. I'm not here to report to you tonight that I'm an alcoholic because I grew up and we didn't have no money. Somebody in here grew up with a silver spoon. I'm not here to report to you tonight that I'm an alcoholic because I'm a poor brother from Central Los Angeles. Look around the room. You know that ain't the reason. I'm not here to report to you tonight that I'm an alcoholic because I'm a short guy. I've seen some big guys in the receiving line. You know, I'm not here to report to you tonight I'm an alcoholic because I'm a man. There's plenty of women in here. I'm an alcoholic for two reasons and two reasons only. One, when I take one, I can't tell you when I'm going to stop. Two, when I sincerely don't want to start again, I start again anyway. I'm bodily and mentally different. That's it. That's all. There are as many stories of the, you know, of how the alcoholic looks, as there are people sitting in this room and outside these rooms, you know. So I'm an alcoholic because I'm bodily and mentally different from my fellows. That's it. That's all. The rest is my story. My story goes a little bit like this. Every single one of you had me in your classroom. I was usually class president or student body president. I was a straight A student. I was teacher's pet. I played ball. I made all-stars. On the outside, I should have been okay. On the inside, I've always felt like if you really knew me, you wouldn't like me. Yeah, I was teacher's pet. Yeah, I was straight A student. I would have traded it all in if it could have been cool. If I just could have been cool. Because in South Central Los Angeles, it was a whole lot more currency placed on cool than on smart. You know, because the cats who was cool, I see you. Some of you in it right now. The ones who was cool, in the bathroom, shooting dice, smoking cigarettes, taking quarters from guys like me that brought extra quarters with them, and you knew how to talk to girls. And girls were a mystery to Ralph. You know, so I'm growing up, and I'm high achieving, but I'm introverted, and I'm a shy guy. You know, I turned 16 years old, still ain't touched nothing. You know, Alcoholics Anonymous is a, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous is a strange and weird place. I got a home group in South Central Los Angeles, and it's a hard group. You know, it's cats in there that's been to the pen and the rest of that. Because when I hear you guys' stories, sometimes I seem like I'm such a late bloomer, because I hadn't touched nothing by the time I'm 16. Cats in here was drinking their parents' alcohol when they was 8 or 9. Alcoholics Anonymous is the first place I ever came to where folk try to out-bottom each other, right? Went to my old home group, and I bounced around 3 or 4 times before I came to stay, right? And I was in my, and I would be in my home group, and these cats, you know, they have penitentiary story, and I wanted a penitentiary story, but I didn't want to go to the pen, you know, because it was exciting and interesting, but my story's mine, you know, it's the one I got. So I'm 16 years old, I ain't touched nothing, you know, Ralph, and I get a girlfriend at 16. Now, Ralph with a girlfriend at 16 don't mean the same thing it means for some of you cats. Ralph with a girlfriend at 16 simply means this. I ran with a group of dudes that went with the same group of girls. One of my boys broke up with this girl. I waited a little time to pass, told my other boy, look, I want to go with her. He went and asked her, came back and told me, she said, yes, now I got a girlfriend, you know. But Ralph don't do girls, right? Some of you guys, and people remember this from my talk, in the days when I was a kid, we had them old rotary telephones. You know, some of y'all might see them in the room. Them old rotary phones. And I would call, this is my official girl, mind you. If you ask her, who do you go with, she would have said Ralph, right? You know, I had other girlfriends before, but this one actually knew she was my girlfriend. You know, on my official girl, I call, that seventh number would come around, seemed like it would come in slow motion. Tara would set in, because I know what's have to happen when she answers the phone. You got to talk as the phone, right? I just hang up on my girl, right? Click, you know. This particular night, go out on a double date. Me and my girl in the back seat, older partner of mine in the front seat with his girl. He was driving. We went to a drive-in movie. Plastic cup of rum and coke came to the back seat this particular night. Drank that rum and coke down, went down real warm, rushed back to the top of my brain. All of a sudden, Ralph's hands started doing things they had never done. Mouth started saying things it had never said. I had arrived. Alcohol did for me what I couldn't do for myself. Gave me the courage to do and to be and to say things I wouldn't do, be and say without it, and I liked it. I liked it a lot. The big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, talks about me in lots of places. Starts talking about me in the front of the book. New friends, there's a chapter in the front called The Doctor's Opinion. And there's a line in The Doctor's Opinion I recognized the first time I saw it. Men and women like me drink essentially for the effect produced by alcohol. Understood that the first time, because that's why I drank. Some of them old veterans, I was running with this old dude, he'd take me to these old people's houses, they'd be drinking that scotch, they'd be going, ah, I'd be going, ugh, but I like what it did when it went down. I'm not overnight alcoholic. I understand we talk about this disease being progressive in nature, because that first night I drank, I didn't get pissy drunk, I didn't throw up all over myself. I got a warm, tipsy feeling. I kissed and licked and sucked on my girl in some places I had never done before, you know. And that's how my drinking stayed. I would drink to go out on the weekends for parties. You know, I'm drinking with youngsters at the time I came up in the late 60s. I'm drinking what they're drinking. Annie Green, Spring, some Boone's Farm, Tyrol, Espanada. You know, I'm drinking that. I graduate from high school in 1971, and I graduate to higher education in every sense of the word. In 71, I'm still drinking to go to parties on the weekend. By the beginning of 1972, I'm drinking not only to go to parties on the weekend, but I'm drinking during the day on the weekend to get ready for the party. By the end of 72, I'm drinking not only on the weekends, but I'm drinking during the week after class, and I've added some non-addictive marijuana to the mix. By the 73, I'm drinking, I'm smoking herb, I'm selling herb, I'm doing other drugs, I'm doing it on a daily basis, and you couldn't have told me it was anything wrong with the way I was living. The Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous talks about at a certain point in my drinking career, I won't be able to tell the true from the false. And the way that that worked for me is this. In the way I'm doing it, isn't that the way everybody does it? Why would you be young, with a bright future, with a little bit of money? I was getting financial aid. Didn't chase some women and getting low to come with the territory. In those days, man, if you came over my house and I couldn't offer you something to drink or something to smoke, I wasn't being a good host. And if I went over your house and you didn't do the same for me, not only weren't you being a good host, wasn't coming over your house no more. You know. Now I'm nothing to discuss. You know, you guys really, I'm not going to say that. I'm glad I grew up at the time I grew up in. I was going to say, you really, I'm glad I grew up. You know, the 60s and the 70s, this country, things were changing. You know, it was an exciting time. It was a crazy time. In some ways, it seemed like a simpler time. You guys coming out to shoot, you've had to worry about practicing safe sex. You have to worry about sexually transmitted stuff. You worry about AIDS and the rest. Man, when I was coming up, I'd go to a club. I'd have a one-question interview for a girl. You get high? If not, next, I don't need to know your sign. I don't need to know your last name. I don't need to know where you work. Let's get to the basis of this relationship. Do you do it the way that I do it? And that's just the way that's just the way I was rolling, man. You know, you couldn't have told me. I hear people get up to the podium now, and you guys share. You guys got a lot. You know, maybe your memories are better, or maybe I burned out the last brains. I don't know. You guys get up here, and you share with precision what happened when you took that first drink. It eased this knot, and it filled this hole, and it took away. Man, if you came up at the time that I came up, and you was this, you felt like you was this wild guy trapped in this square body, it's just what you do. It's just what you do. I didn't know nobody in the 60s. I didn't know nobody who didn't get high. And it wasn't about, you know, just the loot. No. You know, I'm at this major university, man, and I'm with people later on. You know, let me share something with you. Don, I came here 4 times before I came this day. You know, and the way that I used to go do Alcoholics Anonymous, the first 3 times that I came, this is what I would do. Because I'm a good mimic and I'm a good chameleon, you know. I listen to a speaker share from the podium like I'm sharing tonight. I pick out the most profound things, at least in my mind, that he said. I go to a meeting tomorrow night, make sure the speaker's not there and not too many of you guys. I repeat what he said. I tack on and keep coming back and the program works. And I kept getting loaded. I thought if I claimed it from the podium, it would be true in my experience. I couldn't find myself in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I couldn't find myself in any of you guys' stories. In the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, new friends, there's a chapter at the front of the book, Bill's Story. And I would read Bill's story. It's some thin lines in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's a lot of contradictions and paradoxes in this program. You know, when you first come in and you hear people talk about surrender to win. Wait a minute, that don't even make no sense. And there's lots of paradoxes. And some of those thin lines are the lines that make all the difference in the world. And it's a thin line when you're listening to a peer person share, when you read the information in the book. It's a thin line between comparing and identifying. And I would always compare, and I would come up short. I would read Bill's story, and I read his story, and Bill is an older white guy. You know, we don't have that in common. You know, Bill in his story talked about he was a veteran of foreign wars. I'm a Vietnam-era draft dodger. Bill was a Wall Street stockbroker. Check out the way I handle money. You know, we don't have that in common. You know, Bill, when you read his story, Bill goes on and he talks about in his story, there had been no real infidelity. He missed me on that one, too. You know, so it was a lot of differences, and I couldn't see the difference. And the last time I came to the program to say, somebody taught me how to read the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And they said, Ralph, the same way that you read the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous is the way that you listen to our members share their stories when they get up in front of you and share. When you read the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous and when you listen to our members share their stories, ask yourself 3 or 4 questions. Ask yourself, did I drink like he drank? Did I think like he thought? Did I feel like he felt? Or did I do what he did? And when I read Bill's story in the light of those questions, I found my story. Bill in his story talked about the drive for success was on. I proved to the world I was important. I'm at this major university, and I'm going to be somebody. I'm rolling with cats who were going to be professional athletes later on. Political leaders in my city, in the state, and in this country. Captains of industry. You know, people who were going to be movers. And I'm right with them. I'm going to be one of them too. Because I'm an achiever and I'm an accomplisher and I'm used to doing stuff. So that's the way I was looking at it. And just like Bill, when he talked about the drive for success was on, just like him in his story, he talked about drink began to take a more important and exhilarating part in his life. He said, in those days, little did he know, from this alloy of drink and speculation, from this combination of my drinking and my thinking, he said, little did he know he would later forge a weapon that would turn on him and cut him to ribbons like a boomerang. I don't talk like that. You know, I got a mama that have a shortcut way of saying something like that. She said, trouble always start out like fun. You know, and that's just the way it was for me. You couldn't have told me on the front end of that harmless smoking herb and drinking that it was going to take me down the path that it took me. But it took me there. And it took me there in a real way. You know, and we don't have enough time for me to share all the things that should have been signs along the way. I graduated from college. I came out of school and I started working as a counselor for LA City Schools. And although I had the kind of job that should have allowed me to acquire what normal people acquire, I never did that. Never. You know, I'd buy a car. This is when alcohol was working. I'd buy a car, make exactly 3 car payments, then come find it. Come find it. First time I had a car repossessed, I had the nerve to call LAPD. I'm 9 months behind on the car note. 9 months behind on the car note. Come outside, car gone. I call LAPD. I want to report a stolen car. They do what they do. No, Mr. White, the rightful owner just came and picked up this thing, you know. Next 2 times I didn't even trip. I already knew, you know. I'm the kind of brother never had a problem balancing a bank book. Payday, I got money. 2 days later, broke, 0. No problem balancing my bank book. I stayed in the crib from 1976 to 1979 without paying rent. A couple of baffling features about the disease I suffer from, and one of them is this. I can't see my relationship with alcohol until I'm free of it. I can't see what it's doing to me when I'm in the mix. So a couple of things that are real clear to me now, looking back in the rearview mirror of experience, were not at all clear to me when I was going through them. One fact stands out real clear to me about the days I thought alcohol was working. I used to go to work for 2 weeks to live for 2 days. That's it. That's all. I lit a party. Can't tell you the day or the time or the hour. Can't tell you where I was or what I was doing when alcohol ceased to be a luxury for me and became a necessity. I can tell you that it did happen. And it happened in a cold way. The book talks about, you know, by the time I realize I got a problem and need to do something about it, it's already too late for me to do something about it. Cold thing about this disease I suffer from. By the time I know I've crossed the line is way back there somewhere, you know. So I'm one of those kind of people. You know, I'm one of the ones that come in. Book talks about seeking the Lord Companion. I soon became the Lord Companion. I'm one of the ones that come in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and play the regret game. You know how the regret game goes in Alcoholics Anonymous? The game that goes, if I only knew then what I know now, I never would have took that first year right. Remind me of a story I like to tell about a boy named Johnny. Johnny had a habit his father frowned on. Johnny used to like to play with himself. Father comes home from work early one day. Little Johnny's bedroom door is closed. Father opens the door without knocking. Little Johnny's in the bedroom masturbating. Father looks at him and says, son, I thought I told you if you keep doing that, you'll go blind. Little Johnny stopped and looked at his dad and said, well, Daddy, can I just do it till I need glasses? You know, and that story reminds me of me in the life. Because I see you going down, you going down, I'm just going to do it till I need. Book talks about seeking the Lord Companion wasn't long before I became, and we don't have enough time. I got married on a Saturday afternoon in April in 1980. I had a bachelor party the night before my wedding. None of the guys at the bachelor party are getting married the next day. All of them have sense enough to go home 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm still at my bachelor party till 7:30 in the morning, me and my brothers. They pour me in the bed at 7:30. They get me up at 10 o'clock for my 1 o'clock wedding. I'm toe up. I am told, you know, one of them nights where you laid on the bed and tried to stop it from rotating, you know, throwing up stomach lining, one of them kind of nights, you know, I'm supposed to say my own vows at this wedding, right? So I show up and I'm staggering and I'm woozy, and my then wife-to-be took one look at me wobbling up in there, and she looked at the preacher and said, okay, scratch the own vows, say the regular on his ass, right? So now my lines are cut to two words. We get into the ceremony, you know. We get to me, I get ready to say, I do. I say, and threw up all over. Passed out. Have not taken a wedding picture to this day. Pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. New friends, if you're anything like me, when I hit the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I recognized the words you guys were saying in the rooms, but the way you guys used them was not the way I used them in my everyday walk-around vocabulary. You guys were talking about a psychic change and a phenomena of craving and this allergy of the body, and I needed some help with those. But the first time I heard pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization, didn't need no help with that one. Folk like us don't need a dictionary for pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. I lived pitiful, incomprehensible demoralization up close and personal, and I lived it over and over and over and over again. See, I'm the kind of father and I'm the kind of husband. I can remember sitting on my living room couch, wife coming out the bathroom real fast, pulling her pants up, going to the dining room table, picking her purse up off the table, clutching it real close to her as she went back to the bathroom. And I feel this talk because nobody was in the house but me and her, but it got like that in my house. I'm the kind of father and I'm the kind of husband. I remember coming home and sticking my key in the door. Wife and two-year-old daughter, they both sitting here and they crying. I look over here and homeboy sitting in my seat with a gun pointed at my stomach talking about I want my money right now. Fellas, let me holler at you for a minute. I don't know about the rest of you guys, but I always had a lot of fears and a lot of doubts about do I have what it takes to be a husband. Do I have what it takes to be a father? Because if you're in the life, your track record already gives you your answer, right? Because what's the father's role and what's the husband's role? To protect and to provide, and it's a cold-blooded feeling, fellas. Laying in bed with a woman night after night after night after night. Knowing not only aren't you protecting, knowing not only aren't you providing, you the one bringing the wolf to the door. See, they came up in my house three or four times. Each time I pretended to call LAPD, each time I knew I was playing a game with myself. Because they had told me, you're going to give us our money or we're going to come up in there and get it. I'm the kind of father, and I'm the kind of husband. Remember sitting on my back porch, two-year-old daughter coming outside pulling in my coat. Daddy, daddy, that's my piggy bank. I remember stopping and giving her a little grin. Don't worry, baby. Daddy's going to put some dollar bills in here for this change. And I wasn't raised to be stealing from my daughter. I wasn't raised to be stealing from my wife. I was an alcoholic with no tools of recovery, and I did what it took to get what I needed to get. Share with you that my disease is progressive in nature. And in my experience, my disease is progressive in a couple of areas. I share one already. It takes more than it used to take in order for me to get the same effect. But my disease is progressive in another area, my behavior. My behavior gets progressively worse. I'm willing to do more readily than I used to be willing to do to chase it. First time I hit my wife's purse, if you would hook me up to a polygraph, I would have passed when I told you I'm not stealing this money. I'm going to take this $40 and I'm going to replace it before she knows it's missing, and I'm in it. I meant it, because I don't steal. It's a trip how the lines keep blurring and moving when you're in the life. First, I don't steal. Then, oh, I know I don't steal from nobody I know. Then, oh, I know I don't steal from my family. Oh, I know I wouldn't steal from my little girl. So the first time I hit that purse and took 40 and went and spent it up and went out and do what I do, and I came back and I said, I'm going to replace that money before she knows it's missing. I came back looking for some more money. She had moved the purse. I didn't look too hard for it because I couldn't believe I'd hit it. Couldn't believe it. I'm going to replace this money before she knows it's missing. Said it, meant it. Sound still. You know, I'm forever grateful that about 35 years ago, 1934, was a dude went through a hospital for the fourth time. Like I went through a treatment program four times. And this December of 1934, something happened to the guy in the hospital. And when he left the hospital, same doctor had been seeing him. And when he left the hospital this time, the doctor saw something different about him. He said, "I don't know what happened to you." He's in there for the treatment of alcoholism. "I don't know what it is. I can't explain it, but you better hold on to it." Dude left the hospital. His partner had come to see him the month before he went in the hospital. Had told him some things about staying sober. If you want to do this still, if you want to hold on to it, you won't have to give it away. So the alcoholic left the hospital, and a couple of months he running around talking to people, preaching at them, talking at them. "You got to have this white light experience. You got to do this. You got to fall out the bed." Ain't nobody listening to it. Ain't nobody staying sober. So he got a business opportunity. Took him out of town 6 months later. He's 6 months sober. And he goes to Akron, Ohio. And his business didn't come off too well. He found himself in a hotel lobby on a Sunday afternoon. And on that Sunday afternoon in that hotel lobby, he got thirsty. And from the lobby, he could look into the hotel bar, and it seemed like he could hear the ice clinking in the glasses. For the first time in his life, a thought came to him. "I need to find a drunk not to drink." Novel concept. It never occurred to him. "I want to find a drunk not to drink." Series of divine coincidences when we look back. When you're in it, you're just desperate, and it don't look like God at work. It just looked like, whoo. So he saw this directory on the wall. Gets to calling some numbers. Eventually, he ends up with this lady's number. And the lady was a prayer partner of another lady who had a husband who was drinking. So she puts them together, and Bill Wilson calls Ann Smith. "I understand you got a husband that's got a drinking problem." Dr. Bob Smith was in the doghouse that particular Sunday. Kind of like me. Got on the horn with Bill Wilson, and he told him, "Dude, come over. I'll give you 10 or 15 minutes tomorrow. That's all. Tired of people sweating me and talking to me and the rest of that." Bill Wilson showed up the next day, and that 15 minutes turned into about 4.5 to 5 hours. Shortly thereafter, those two gentlemen set about trying to work with other drunks. And in 2 years, about 40 people were staying sober. Imagine that. 40 people were staying sober. It seemed like that New York hustler must have looked at that Akron physician and said to him, "How are we going to let Ralph White know when it's his time?" And they said, "We'll put it in a book." And they put me in that book. They put me in that book. That book got published in 1939. I found you guys some many years later. And they put me in that book. 2 weeks after I had said, I'm gonna replace that money before she knows it's missing. Same scenario presented itself. Got paid, gave my old lady some money, came home, spent up all my money, came home looking for some more money. And the thought of replacing the money didn't come to my mind. It got replaced by a new thought. I said, "Last time I took $40, came back looking for some more money to spend, to get," and she had moved a purse. "This time I'll take all the money out of the purse, and that I don't spend up, I'll sneak it back in the purse." I was off and running to hit my wife's purse on a regular basis. I go to meetings all these many years later. I still go to meetings, lots of meetings, for a lot of reasons. And one of the reasons I go to meetings so often is because I can come in here and I can talk shorthand. I ain't got to explain it, you know, because some stuff is unexplainable. I can come in here and I can say something like, "You know what it's like to be out doing our thing all night? and to be laying in bed because my wife started sleeping with the purse up under the pillow, right? You know what it's like to have that feeling on you when you've been out knowing that money's just an arm's length away? You know, somebody know what that's like. You laying in the bed and that's feelings up, and you know, and you wait for that real regular breathing to set in. And you let it set in for a while. I'm laying in bed, she laying in bed. And I let that regular breathing, and I come out my side of the bed, and I come over on her side, and I come under the pillow, and I come out real slow, creep out the bedroom, creep out the front door, I jump in my car, I coast out the driveway, I'm gone. Wednesday, I might be come back on Monday. Did that one too many Wednesdays, came back one Monday, a note was on the screen door, rest of your stuff is at your mama's house, suitcase on the porch, I'm put out of my house, I'm now my daddy. Course of that next year, my five brothers got put out their respective homes. All of us ended up at my mom's house and we damn near killed her. Four of my brothers college educated, six grown men. There were times we couldn't come up with $5 between us. Damn near killed her. When I first got put out of my house and went to stay at my mom's house, my ex-wife thought it was something salvageable about this piece of man she married. She used to bring my daughter over to my mother's house on Saturday afternoon so we could keep a father-daughter relationship. And I wanted to be a father to my daughter with everything in me. I really, really, really did. I wanted to take my girl to Disneyland and Magic Mountain. I wanted to take her to a movie on a Saturday afternoon. I wanted to walk up the street with her little hand in my big hand, take her to the store and buy her ice cream. I wanted to sit her in my lap and read stories to her. I wanted to tuck her in bed at night and get a good night kiss. I wanted to get the look from my little girl that I've seen men in this fellowship get. The look like, this is my daddy and this is my hero. And the best I could do on those Saturday afternoons was 30 minutes. 30 minutes. Tell my mom something like, I'm going to the store to buy Rain some ice cream. I disappeared. I would sneak back on Sunday night when her mom was picking her up. Some of them long Sunday nights I can still remember, sticking my head around the side of my mom's house, tears flowing, flowing. And I can remember thinking to myself as I saw those two heads in the car and the headlights backing out the driveway, there goes my life backing out this driveway. And I've heard a lot of people say they were scared of dying out there. That's not a part of my story. I was never scared of dying. I was scared I was going to keep waking up to the same old thing. Monday the same as Tuesday, the same as Sunday, the same as Christmas, over and over and over again. And I'm so glad God don't make misery comfortable. And on October the 11th, 1986, I got miserable enough and I got tired enough that I got directed to my fourth program of recovery. I went to the Harbor Light Center on Skid Row in downtown Los Angeles. 2 days after, they took me to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous that they brought into the facility. And that October of 1986, I was in a real bad way. Only share with you the tip of the iceberg. It's a trip because in my alcoholism, the way it expressed for me, because I was still working for many years. And the trip about it is, I was advancing at work as the disease was progressing. So in 85, I'm working in management in the law department of a major utility company. Cool thing about a guy like me, the book talks about the alcoholic more than most folk lead a double life. I understand, I'm the double life guy. Because I'm this business guy by day, but I'm a vampire at night. You know, and so thing about the way that I do it, the vampire starts showing up in the daytime. They ain't paying the vampire to show up at work. It's a trip because the vampire always outgrows the businessman. You know, he always outgrows the housewife. The vampire always outgrows the husband or the father, you know, and that double life, and the vampire starts showing up at work, and pretty soon they say, dude, you gotta go, you know. And so this had been like, I had been working to move up the ladder. This had been the first job I got. That was our first management position. I was on my way to being somebody. And I got fired from that job, and I was on the streets, and I was a foot soldier, and it became a full-time occupation for me getting loaded. So that October in 1986, I was in a real dark place. And I was thinking to myself, I'll never be able to forgive myself for the things I had done and what I had become. And guys like me don't get second chances. I hadn't looked at myself full face in a mirror in over 4 years. I couldn't stand to look at what I was. I was a walking skeleton. You know, that's the best way I could put it. And that October in 1986, I went up into that Harbor Light Center. They took me to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And a gentleman was standing up in front of the group sharing somewhat like I am tonight. And I remember looking at him, and he was sharing about taking from the family. And he was sharing about taking from the job. And I remember looking at him and thinking to myself, yeah, you sharing about doing scandalous things, but you look scandalous. You should have been doing that too. I'm different. Y'all ain't gonna hear my business. And the speaker seemed like he knew I was in the room and was reading my mail. He dropped something on me like this. He said, if you're sitting in this room right now, you are not responsible for your disease, but you are responsible for your recovery. And you have just now tapped into a source of power much greater than yourself. And you don't have to drink, and you don't have to use, no matter what, provided you are willing to fulfill some conditions. And that speaker that night caught my attention. And that speaker went on to say, this is the only club you can be a member of where the worse off you are when you get here, the better off your chances of staying. And I got the message of hope at the first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous they took me to. He described to me what I suffer from. Did it in a strange way. This dude was talking about me, talking about himself. Had never seen anything like it. Never in my life. A lot of people have been talking at me, about me, to me, down to me, but this cat was hitting me where I live. He shared with me that there's something physically different about me, and seemed like he invited me to diagnose myself. Don't know about you. It's some anatomical stuff that goes on with a guy named Ralph when I'm new. And if we got any new people in here, it might be some anatomical stuff going on with you too. I learned some stuff about myself. I learned that when my behind is raw, my mouth closes and my ears open. It's just that when my ass starts healing, my mouth starts running and my ears start closing. Thank God it was tenderized long enough for me this time to be paralyzed enough to hear the music of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that speaker that night was talking and seemed like he was talking directly to me, and I was taking it personal. He shared that something physically different about me and invited me to diagnose myself. Don't take my word for it, Ralph. Ask yourself, how many times did you say, I'm just going to spend 20? What happened? Whole paycheck. How many times did you say, I'm going to stop off at happy hour for a minute? What happened? Whole paycheck. How many times did you say, I'm going to stop off at my boy Steve's house for a minute? What happened? Whole paycheck. Ralph, did it happen once? Did it happen twice? If your name is Ralph, every 2 weeks from 1979, 1985, whole paycheck. My experience, not yours, not my sponsors, not Bill Wills, not nobody else. My experience abundantly confirms for me when I take one of anything, no matter where I have to go, what I have to do, who I have to see, no matter how great the wish or the necessity, my body takes over and I have to have another. Okay, Ralph, smart guy, if it's just my body, how do you explain stone sober? My car seemed to drive to the LIQ on payday. Second part of this disease, the mental obsession, the obsession that somehow, someday, I'll be able to control and enjoy this magic potion I discovered all those many years ago. Somebody help me control and enjoy. Why am I stuck on that? Check this out. Anytime I was controlling, I wasn't enjoying. Anytime I was enjoying, I damn sure wasn't controlling. Why am I stuck on control and enjoy? I can't drink because of my body. I can't not because my mind refuses to accept that fact. I'm powerless. Third part of this disease, spiritual malady. 12 and 12 describes it as a soul sickness. And it says, Ralph, if you work on the spiritual, the mental, and the physical are straightened out, that's what we do. That's what we do. Don't get scared. Don't get scared. If you anything like me, oh, he coming with the G word. I knew it. I was waiting on it. Check this out. I was raised Southern Baptist, you know. I was raised, so I feel you if that's where you at. I was raised that way, you know. And I'm in the South, so some people might recognize. We went to Sunday school. We went to church. We ate dinner at church. We went to evening service. We went to BG. We went to choir. I said, when I turn 16 years old, you won't have to worry about Ralph White darkening the doors of nobody else's church. said it, meant it, did it for a very long time. So I feel you if that's what you own. You know, if you're sitting back there thinking to yourself, yeah, dude, I know you're getting ready to drop the God thing on me. It's easy for you. You look like you feel like doing that stuff. Look at them guys in suits. That God thing come easy for them. Check this out. I did not come up in here walking toward the light. I came up in here running from the fire. And if your ass is on fire, that's a good place for you to be too. You know, I didn't get this. So don't worry about that. Don't worry about that. When we talk about the, you know, working on the spiritual, you know, what does that look like for me? You know, what does working on the spiritual look like? You know, because I'm not, then trust me, you know, because if you're sitting in here, the book talks about it, and I don't say it because it's in the book, I just say it because it's in my experience. If you're sitting in here and you think that this program is just about not drinking and just about not using, you're shortchanging the program and you're shortchanging yourself. This program is about a whole lot more than that. I'm not knocking physical sobriety. If you just don't drink and you just don't use, you might stop going to jail on the weekend. If you just don't drink and you just don't use, you might make it home with a whole paycheck. If you just don't drink and you just don't use, you might make it to work on Monday morning. But what this program has to offer is a whole lot more than that. What this program is really about is about obtaining and maintaining access to a source of power that does for me what I can't do for myself. What this program is really about is about obtaining and maintaining access to a source of power that can do anything but fail. What this program is really about, you want to put a face on Alcoholics Anonymous? Anybody in here want to see what this program is about? Because this program is not a blue book. This program is not just some people who's sitting around and me. This program walks, talks, and it shakes hands. It's got a beating heart, and it's got real broad shoulders. You want to put a face on Alcoholics Anonymous? You want to see it? What this program is really about is about taking people like us. Look around this room right now. What this program is about taking people like us, drunks and boosters and child abuse, wife abusers, failures as parents, failures as kids, broken down pieces of men and women who don't have dreams and goals and hopes anymore. This program takes people like us and it puts us together in one room. And I stick one hand in your hand, another hand in God's hand, and we pick up our beds. And we walk out of these rooms as mothers, fathers, sisters, brothers, sons, daughters, employees, employers, role models in our community. This program is about growth. This program is about change. If it's going to be any changes made in my life, it begins and it ends with me. I'm not tonight's speaker because I'm the one that's trying to scare you into sobriety. I don't know nothing about that. You know, I'm not the one that's going to tell you if you go back out there still kicking ass. I'm not into all of the don'ts. I told you guys, if you read between the lines, you know I was doing some of everything when I was out there. You know, and what I used to think of as my heyday, people used to look at me and be like, damn, Ralph, ain't you scared of overdose? And I'd be like, scared of overdose? I'm scared of the deadly underdose. You better put some on, man. You know? So the message that holds alcoholic of my variety is not the message of fear. The big book talks about a message that's got to have depth and it's got to have weight. And the message tonight's speaker brings to you that's got the most depth and the most weight, you're looking at a guy who at 33 years old had given up on life. You're looking at a guy who at 33 years old did not know what school this little girl was enrolled in and didn't know where his family was living. You're looking at a guy who at 33 years old had not answered anybody's 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock wake-up call to go to work in so long, I no longer thought I was employable. You're looking at a guy who came from a major university in this country, and my job at the end was taking the trash out for a 21-year-old. I was sleeping in the back of my mother's garage, and I was eating lemons off a neighbor's lemon tree for breakfast. And the men and women in this fellowship I craved, this fellowship met me right where I was. And you loved me, and you nursed me back to health. You put my feet on the path to really go somewhere. They used to say something in the meetings that they still say to this very day. They said, let us love you till you can love yourself. And I didn't believe that one. How you going to tell me you'll love something like me? I wouldn't even look at myself in the mirror. I stink. How you going to tell me you'll love something like this? If you turn your back on me, I'm liable to go up in your purse right now. How you going to tell me you'll love this? And that was before I knew what happens in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. That was before I knew what happens when the God in you reaches out to the God in me. That was before I knew that in Alcoholics Anonymous, we specialize in loving unlovable people. And you nursed me and you loved me back to health. You gave me some stuff. And I got busy. I was in that recovery program. And I came out of that recovery program, and it was my fourth one. And when I went in there armed with something a little bit different. I was serious each time I went into treatment. This time I added a different element. I was committed. Serious is how I feel. Committed is what I do. I was committed to do whatever it took to get sober one day at a time. You will hear a lot of people share that this program is not for those, you know, not for those who need it. It's for those who want it. And then you'll hear some people share it's not even for those who want it. It's for those who do it. It's for those who do it. The disease is centered in my thinking, but recovery is centered in my feet. I don't treat the disease with the same head where it's centered. Recovery is in my feet. It's what I do. You got a sponsor that's telling, ain't nobody caring about do you want to or do you feel like it? Get busy. You know, get busy. Ain't nobody asking do I feel like it? Get busy. I got loaded plenty of days when I was sick. I report for duty. Recovery is in my feet. Taking actions contrary to what I think I need to be doing without believing I'm going to get the results. Recovery is in my feet. I work with a lot of new guys. I don't ever talk about, Ralph, can you guarantee this is my 17th program? How you know what's going to happen if I go up in there? I don't, but I know what's going to happen if you don't. How you going to guarantee me what's going to happen if I practice these steps? I don't, but I know what's going to happen if you don't. How I know that? Because that's what I've been doing. And if I keep doing what I've been doing, I'm going to keep getting what I've been getting. So that's, you know, so I got on, you know, I started and I came out of that program, man, and I was committed to do whatever it said. So I went out and I got a home group and I started going to meetings. And I fell in love with the fellowship before I fell in love with the program. And I started going to meetings and I started going to meetings and I started going to meetings. When I got 90 days sober, they started asking me to share on panels. I thought I had been discovered. I thought, somebody heard me share and they know that my message needs to go out everywhere. I didn't know that we mind newcomers. You know, I didn't know. But God will work with your defects. God will work with your defects. It really don't matter your motive. He'll work with your defects. So every time somebody asked H&I panels, I was there. You know, 6 months sober, I got my own panel and I started going. And I would go once a month to that place. And these cats, I was at a cold place. And when you ask if there are any alcoholics present, they'd be mad. They'd have to cut the TV off. But I'd walk away from every single one of my panels with my head up a little higher. Because I'm a foot soldier. And I come from that dark place that some of us come from at the end. I had had some things. I had been some places. I had done some things. And I had achieved some things. But I'm one of the drunks that went all the way to the bottom. I'm one of the ones that was my full-time profession. I'm one of the ones that was walking the streets at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. And that's where you would find me. So it had been a long time since I felt necessary. And it had been a long time since I felt needed. It had been a long time since I felt of use and of value to anybody. So when I would leave there, I'd walk with my head up a little bit higher. I went 18 months without a job and I went to 3 meetings every single day. Not only did I get a sponsor, I got a couple of road dogs. You know, my sponsor is who I try to put my best foot forward. Yes, sir, I'm practicing this stuff. But you know, I got a couple of road dogs too. I look at my boys over here and I really like that because road dogs were important for me because if this ain't fun, Ralph ain't doing it. And I got a couple of guys that was hungry for recovery as me. My younger brother who's a year younger but he's 3 months older than me in recovery, and I had another boy, Leah, and we went everywhere together. And you know, your road dog, as he's a little different than your sponsor. Matter of fact, that's who you talk about your sponsors to, you know. You ain't going to be talking about the girls with your sponsor, but with your boys, yeah, you talk about the girls. You know, that's what you do. And it's fun. So I had a couple of guys like that. You know, I got a sponsor at about 4 months of recovery. And the way I got my sponsor, I was sitting at a meeting, and I was sitting there. It was a speaker meeting, and I was doing this newcomer thing at the meeting. They had a break. And at the break, I wouldn't go up and get coffee because I was terrified I might stumble and everybody would be looking at me, right? And at the same time that I thought everybody was looking at me, I had this sinking feeling that nobody knew I was in the room. Same time. And I was sitting there. And this guy, I'm a watcher. I'm an observer. And this guy had been a big presence in my group. I love when Bill talks about in his story when he saw Abby, he said he was a man whose deportment shouted out he had that. So anyway, this guy had deportment, the way he carried himself, shouted out he was a man with that. And people would respect him. And I loved hearing him share. And I started seeing his walk. And I started looking at him. And he was leading a meeting that night. And at the break, he came down to this guy who was sitting there feeling like an outsider inside the rooms of AA. And he came to me and he asked me my name. And I told him. And I can't tell you who spoke at the meeting that night, but I remember the meeting went on. And at the end of our meeting, somebody read a vision for you. And then the leader that night, Bob Hunt, said, and after a moment of silence for the alcoholic who still suffers, I want my new friend, Ralph. The leader said, and somebody knew my name in Alcoholics Anonymous. Somebody knew my name. When I go to meetings, I know what it is that we do at breaks and at the beginning. We all are so glad to see each other. We haven't seen each other for a week, and we hug and we kick it and the rest. And I always am mindful to look for the person on the outskirts. Look for the person who feels like an outsider inside the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. That guy changed my life. He knew my name. And I started rolling with him. And I come from a dark place. I come from a taken place. I'm one of those that was deep in the life. There's some others in here that know the places I come from. The places I come from, they don't say keep coming back when you're in them. You run out of money, it's like get your goat smelling ass up out of here. You know, those are the places I come from. You know, so I never knew about altruistic movement. I never knew something for nothing. So I wouldn't ask this guy to sponsor me. I'm rolling with him. I'm in the car. He's taking me around places, and I didn't have what it took because I just didn't have it in me to take one more rejection. I just didn't have it. So I knew I didn't have nothing to offer him, and he was a big guy in my eyes. A lot of people knew him and respected him. So I didn't know how to ask him to sponsor me. So we rolled in one day, and I'm like, doing what I do. You know, I consider you my sponsor. Anyway, and he just kind of smiled. Y'all, the sponsors be knowing, and he just kind of smiled. And that guy got in my life, and that guy has changed my life. Folk do that in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's what we do, the transformational power of this power. I hear a lot of people that will come up and they'll talk about, Ralph, am I ready to sponsor now? There's some people in here probably sitting here, we're going to go all over the board for a minute, and then I'm going to sit down. You know, there's some people in here that probably be wondering about that, because I like the energy in this group. And what I really like, I heard the announcements. I heard the H&I announcements. I heard the announcements about the workshop. You know, and what I really like, this program of ours, if you're in here, we got a program that has a symbol. You know, forget the copyright trip, Governor. And that symbol is a circle and a triangle. And the triangle is three sides, and they're represented by unity, recovery, and service. And the unity is represented by the meetings and the fellowship. And I bring my body to the fellowship. And I bring the body and the mind, and the rest will follow. And I come to the fellowship, and I love going to meetings. They became the high point of my day. I asked a guy, how long do you have to go to meetings? He said, you have to go to meetings till you want to go to meetings. I want to let you know, ladies and gentlemen, I haven't had to go to meetings in over 24 years. They're the high point of my day. You know, I love going to meetings. You know, and then there was a certain point, we were at a marathon. We call them marathons. You guys call them alcathons. And a group came out and they presented the big book in a way that caught my attention and that caught my interest. And I said, damn, why be in a 12-step program and not practice the 12 steps? You know, I'm the kind of guy that anything I'm in, I get invested in it. You know, I'm all the way in it. When I'm mixing drinks, I want to know all the ingredients that go in it. I'm the guy that, you know, I subscribed to High Times. I knew how to hang a plan or something. I knew I'm in it when I'm in it, you know. And so in here, I want to be in it when I'm in it. So these people presented that book in a way, and I'm like, wow, I'm really interested in that. And so these people came out, and me and my brother asked my mom, and on November of 1987, we had some drunks sitting around my mom's dining room table. And I remember her going to church that Sunday morning, and with tears in her eyes, she looked at these drunks sitting around her dining room table, and she said, thank you for my sons, because these drunks had these blue books open. And we started going through that book page by page, line by line, and it was about 12 of us. And we liked it so much that when we finished chapter 7, the 12th step, which took us about a year, we didn't go any further. We said, let's do it again, and we invited some more people. And we've been doing that ever since November of 1987. We've been doing that consistently for 23 years, Never Too Early Big Book Workshop. We'll be meeting on this Sunday morning too, and now from 12 people, when we open up, we usually have about 300. On a Sunday morning, we average more than the number of people that's in this room, and who would have thought it? Who would have thought it? That's the recovery, the 12-step process. And then I take my recovered spirit and I put it in the service, the third part of our triangle. What I'm doing is the spotlight work in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm standing in front of everybody. Somebody out there is thinking, damn, I can't wait to get up in front of everybody and share my story. He must have a hell of a program. Somebody else is thinking the opposite. I'll never be able to talk in front of people. Will I be able to have this thing? Check this out. What I'm doing is talking about recovery. It ain't got a whole lot to do with living. This is a living program. It's within the grasp. It's within the reach of anybody sitting here under the sound of my voice. Don't trip. I'm just talking about recovery. That's one of the things that's my niche to be able to do, and it's okay. You know, don't trip off that. You can do that. But who I really respect, if you want your recovery to go to another level, if you really want to take your recovery to a different level, it's people in here that do it all the time. I call them the shadow soldiers, service workers. They get up on a Thursday night or they get up on a Friday. I don't care if it's an NFL game on. I don't care if the World Series is on. I don't care if it's Game 7 or the playoffs. I don't care if baby's at home. They get up and they open the door and they fire up the coffee pot and they wait for Ralph White to show up. They get up and they get in their car and they pick up a couple of people and they take them to a hospital or they take them to an institution and they look for Ralph White and they get up and they plan events and they do all the work and they get criticized and talked about by the other folk and they look for Ralph White. I call them the shadow soldiers, and you sitting in here right now and my hat is off to you, and I'm so grateful that you kept the light on for a drunk like me and you continue to keep the light on. And that is the work of Alcoholics Anonymous. The rest is window dressing. The work of Alcoholics Anonymous has always been and will always be one drunk sharing with another, experience strength and hope. If you have not known the joys of sponsorship, I'm one of the people that don't say you have to be all the way through all 12 steps. Stay one step in front of the posse. If somebody sees something in you, I don't get to be determined whether I'm the attraction. I don't get to determine that. The attractive determine that. If somebody sees something in you, if Bob Hunt had said to me in a well-intentioned way, which a lot of people do, I don't think I have anything to offer you, what I would have heard is no. What I would have heard is no. Well, Ralph, I'm scared to sponsor. I don't have the words. I don't know what to say. Check this out. God does not call the qualified. He qualifies the called. Just don't worry about it. How many parents we got in here? You didn't know how you was going to do that either till they popped out and was here. Then you just get ready. Same thing with sponsorship. When it happens, you just get ready. In my 24 years in this program, I've had all manner of things that have happened for me, man. And I am as grateful today as the day that I came up in here. And it's important I say this. A couple of years ago, I went through my third major valley in recovery. Because in recovery, I had gotten married again, got all the way down the aisles, got the pictures to prove it, you know. I've got a 15-year-old daughter at home who's never seen her daddy loaded, and one day at a time, she never will. Here's the miracle. I go places all the time. I'm gone more than I'm at home. And every time I leave, I'll tell River something like, okay, I'm going. I told her yesterday, I'll be gone today. You know, last weekend I said, I'll be gone and I'll be back on Sunday night, or I'll be back Monday. And here's the deal. That young girl has never had the flicker of doubt in her eyes like, I wonder, is he coming home? Because her entire life, daddy's always been home. Imagine that. That 27-year-old daughter whose piggy bank I was going in. When she was 2 years old, she's studying for the state bar exam in California right now. She went through undergrad. She went through law school. Daddy there every step of the way. I remember at the law school graduation, if you see the video, you see my little girl on this arm and my big girl, and I get to look for my girls like, this is my daddy and this is my hero. And that's Alcoholics Anonymous. When 5 years ago, we gave my mom a 75th birthday party, a surprise, and we pulled it off. And at the end of the evening, my mom, who was the oldest of her siblings and started helping raise them, she started having babies when she was 18. So she never had a chance to have fun and just see to herself, though she does now in retirement. She's all over. But at the end of the night, my mom said, Ralph, this is the first time I've ever had a party. So at 75 years old, I wanted to thank Alcoholics Anonymous for giving my mama a party. You know, that's Alcoholics Anonymous. Went through my third major valley a couple of years ago, and it was so cold I felt like I needed a recovery home with 22 years sober. Lost my marriage, lost my home, lost all my money. I was in the market, just lost everything, and felt like, God damn, I wanted to stop going around the country talking. I wanted to stop sponsoring. I felt fraudulent in my sponsorship. Felt like that because I got caught up in. Here's the deal. Do I believe I suffer from an illness that only a spiritual experience can conquer? I believe that. So once I believe that, I started putting my feet on the path of looking for this spiritual experience. My problem is I don't know what a spiritual experience looks like. So I measure spiritual experience in material terms. So when I got broke, and when I got down to nothing, and when I felt like I was down to nothing, I thought that something was wrong with the way that I was operating. Something was wrong with me. And check this out if you're sitting in here right now. I can't measure spiritual progress with a material yardstick. So don't trip off that. Don't trip off of that. And I was really caught up in looking at that. Because in the deal that we do, spiritual, there's a line in the book. It came true in my experience. I will not be able to survive the certain trials and low spots ahead unless I enlarge and perfect my spiritual life. Enlarge, bigger, perfect, better. Bigger and better my spiritual life. How you do that, Ralph? Self-sacrifice and working with others. I never stopped working with my boys. I sponsor women. I never stopped sponsoring. I was butt naked in front of them. I always thought that I am enough, just who I am. I never knew till that's all I was left with. I never knew it. And in that deep valley of having nothing, I found out I had everything I needed. I found out you can grow in the valley. I found out that God is transformational. I found out that He'll transform what looks like is darkness to you into something that's valuable to somebody else. I found out that He's got a boy that He thinks so highly of that He says, okay, dude, check this out. I got a task and I got a mission that I think you qualified to do. Somebody gonna need to know that they can lose a house and not have to drink. I think you just the guy to talk about it. Somebody gonna know that you can lose a marriage of 20 years and they ain't got a drink. I think you just the guy to talk about it. Somebody gonna need to know that they can go into real dark places and still grow in that valley. And I think you just the guy to talk about it. I'm still not a crying guy. I'll tell all you guys, oh, it's okay to shed tears and all that, but hell no, I ain't. And one day I'm rolling, and I'm in the car, you know, and sometimes I can't find God. But you know how the cell phones have just ruined everything? You used to know your mama's phone number and your sister's phone. I don't know nobody's phone number now because all I got is names, right? And it feels like that with God sometimes. It feels like that with God sometimes when I'm rolling by myself. That's why we do this thing together. So I'm rolling one day and it just came on me real tough. Why is everything on me? And I couldn't feel His presence, and I couldn't feel Him nowhere, and I didn't know His number, and I couldn't pray, and I'm crying. But feet trained. That's why it's what we're doing here. My feet were trained, and I called somebody. And this is what I found out. If you get in the dark, and you can't find Him, and you can't pray, and you don't know how to reach Him, this is what I did. I called somebody. And as we were talking, you three-wayed me. You three-wayed me. In the conversation, it felt like God was sitting in on the conversation. And that's what always happens in Alcoholics Anonymous. When it's more than two of us, He sits up in there and you three-wayed me. And I learned some valuable lessons in the valley. You'll hear people share all the time, God won't give you more than you can handle. That's true, but life will. That's why you need God. And in that valley, coming out the other side, bigger and better. Bigger and better. Never gave up on Alcoholics Anonymous. Never gave up on sponsoring. Never gave up on talking. Never gave up on sharing. When I most think I need you to come see about me, that's when I most need to go see about you. Grow God, shrink Ralph. That's the whole deal. That's the whole thing. Grow God, shrink Ralph. Spiritual life ain't never been about acquisition. It's always about subtraction. It always talks about in the book, abandon yourself, self-abandonment. You know, always. Ain't never about acquisition. It's always about subtraction. Don't trip. Somebody in here, if you're in a dark place right now, just say to yourself, is it all right now? Don't get into next week. Don't get into Christmas. I'm going to say that and I'm going to get out of here because, you know, the thing about the perspective, because God does His work so well and He blesses me so well that I get so caught up in maintaining the blessings, I forget to maintain the relationship with the one who gave them to me, and I get twisted. In 1986, I was in that treatment program because I'm tripping right now. I still ain't financially recovered, and we're in the Christmas season. Holidays are big in my house. Holidays are important to me. I'm tripping because I can't do it big like I used to do it big. And what are they thinking the rest of that? And so when I talk to you guys, it centers me. And it reminds me of that Christmas in 1986. I was in a treatment center. And they were putting money up from me because I was on disability. And I went out and I bought my daughter what now in my memory seems like the most hideous coat in the world. It was a little pink jacket with a gray fur collar. But if you had been a daddy who had not showed up for Christmas in a long time, that Christmas in 1986, that coat looked like a mink stole to me. And I got to remember that. That God has been good to his boy, and he continues to be. I sat out there in the back before I got up here, and I listened to people talk to me about, Ralph, you've helped me with your tapes, you've helped me with your talks, you've helped me. And I thought to myself, what kind of power is that? That can transform what I used to think of as the worst thing I ever experienced. And they can put me in that third phase of development. The place that most of us want to get to. Let's say this and I'm going to get out of here for real. Came in here, most of us prayer life mirrors my spiritual life. Earliest prayer, almost all of us say, help me. We had a lot of people take white chips. Help me. Good place to be. I don't know nothing. I'm humble. You guys help me. Then I get to that third step prayer. I get to the seventh step prayer. Give me. Grant me. Give me strength. Give me direction. Grant me peace. And then I get to that third phase of development. Use me. Use me. I've always wanted to be important, and I've always wanted to do something significant. And I can think of nothing more important and nothing more significant than being a participating member of the life-saving, life-changing experience that is Alcoholics Anonymous. Use me. I get a blessing so that I can be a blessing. Recovery for me is a gift from God. What I do with my recovery, my gift to God. My name is Ralph White. I am an alcoholic.